From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in Edina, Minnesota, 1956, with the opening of the first modern mall. Southdale Center was the brainchild of Austrian architect Victor Gruen, a socialist who described American sprawl as, quote, an avenue of horror. Gruen envisioned malls as hubs for development that included apartments, hospitals even, office space. Southdale Center looked like the typical malls we've come to recognize. Storefronts facing in, anchor stores on separate ends, and a central court with art, a cafe, and more. Now, by the 1980s, of course, malls were part of mainstream pop culture. Think about board games like Mall Madness, shows like Shop Till You Drop. Pop stars held concerts in malls. Malls were destinations for teenage dates. As Time magazine reported, quote, that mall was an ecosystem unto itself, a combination of community and commercialism peddling everything you needed and everything you didn't. Magic Eye posters, wind catchers, Air Jordans, slap bracelets. The giant department stores that held its flanks were miniature malls unto themselves with their own escalators and sections and scents. And I'm thinking of Mallrats, and that kid is back on the escalator. 1,500 malls were built in the U.S. between 1956 and 2005. Today, there are about 1,100, and analysts say that within the next 4 years, about one out of every four malls will close its doors. Maybe you've seen photos of abandoned malls that have gone viral. Malls like, yes, pour one out from Medley Center in Irondequoit. Numerous headlines from sources like Time, Business Insider, and Forbes touting the death of malls or how malls are doomed. Now, is that fair? A popular meme is things millennials killed. Home phones. Malls routinely top the list. But are malls really dying? Do they need to reinvent? We're going to talk about that this hour, and I'm always glad to be joined by Dennis Wilmot, Senior Vice President for Leasing and Development at Wilmorite. Dennis, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Evan, good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
And the reason we're here is Emily Hesney Lynch is to blame. She's director of content for iHeartRock, a freelance social media strategist, and was musing about malls just last week. Thanks for being here again.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
And also with us is Lindsay Hicks, a former marketing director at a mall in Michigan called Woodland Mall, now assistant director of marketing at RIT. Lindsay, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
How long were you at the mall in Michigan?
I was there for almost 2 years.
For about 2 years. Okay. So Emily, what was the problem last week? Tell me what was going on.
Well, last weekend I headed out to the mall with my husband because he got a brand new job and needed some new clothes for work. And we spent about 2 hours there. We went to about 8 different stores and walked out empty-handed. So we were both feeling some frustration and angst over our lack of productivity in our time there.
Okay. And so you let Twitter know and that the mall didn't really work for you. But obviously there's a lot of differences mall to mall and place to place and market to market, because when you look at trends of what really is dying, there's different sort of levels of this stuff. And Dennis, you probably, well, you're kind enough not to roll your eyes at the idea that malls are dying, but you've heard that for a number of years. And there's no doubt retail has been impacted by online shopping, the Amazons of the world, and more. What do you think the reality of the big picture for malls is?
Well, and I don't think Emily's experience is completely unusual these days. And before I get into more of the macro market factors involved, I think Emily's issue with her experience last week is in part a function of the retailers and the experience the retailers are providing their customers. Unfortunately for us as mall owners, that's a very important segment of the industry that we have little or no control over. And while we continue to invest money to make the experience better, whether that's through common areas, new additions, new experiences, there is a limitation as to how much we can do, because if the retailer isn't going to reciprocate that effort, that is out of our control. As it relates specific to about the trends and really what has been occurring over, I'd say, probably the past 6 to 10 years, and with the downturn in 2008, that obviously agitated a lot of economic issues. But our industry, back in its early stages in the 50s, with the GDP of the U.S. economy being driven by discretionary consumer expenditures up to 60 or 70%, which is essentially mostly retail, our cycles were completely dependent on the economy and how the consumer, or if the consumer, was spending. And when there were downturns, the consumers stopped spending, the retailers contracted, they closed stores, when the economy recovered, the consumer spended more money and the retailers expanded. And it was a fairly predictable cycle, certainly for us. But what has changed, and there's a lot of different reasons, but I think technology, the shopping habits of the millennial generation in part, we have not seen that recovery. And if you look based on employment, all the economy is running very well right now. People are spending money, but they're not necessarily spending money in the same places they did in decades past. So while there is a continued contraction in terms of store count, which ultimately flows down to less malls because there's less demand for space, the industry is looking for what I would say an equilibrium where there is going to be a balance. I don't think retail in terms of a four-wall format is going the way of the dinosaurs, but it is going through an adjustment, and it's incumbent on owners like ourselves to react proactively, if you will, to these changes because in some cases, and if we want to talk about Irondequoit, we can, you know, the reaction was too late. And once a mall heads in a certain direction, it is unstoppable in terms of the outcome of that property. And in the case of our assets here in Rochester, we've tried and continue to stay hope to stay ahead of that change.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. And what I'd like to do is follow up with Dennis about how he views, if you're thinking about what Wilmorite holds, you got Grease Ridge, you've got Henrietta, you've got Victor, Eastview Mall, and Pittsford Plaza.
Correct.
Okay. And they're all very different places, and we'll talk about that. And then I think our guests in studio will give us a sense for how they view, you know, Wilmorites look at those properties and what maybe millennial generations, I don't want to make this just a millennial thing, it's not, but what shoppers now expect, want, or what would bring them or keep them going to malls. So I think that'll be instructive. I have a flood of comments already, which I could probably just read all day. And listeners, you can call the program and weigh in as well if you want to talk about what would keep you going to malls or not. But there is an impact on jobs. I mean, I do think we have to say that. What Dennis is bringing up here is if we all decide to only shop online, there isn't enough of a job sort of replacement for, let's just take Amazon, for example. If everybody bought everything they bought at malls on Amazon, there would not be an equal number of jobs created by Amazon to replace the retail. This is from Time Magazine. Since 2002, department stores have lost 448,000 jobs. That's an overall industry decline of 25%. The growth of online retailers, meanwhile, has not offset those losses. The e-commerce sector has added 178,000 jobs over the past 15 years. So a net loss, doing the math, of something like 270,000 jobs with this change in shopping habits. That's just something that we have to consider. Okay, so Grease, Henrietta, Marketplace Mall, Eastview Mall, very different properties. I mean, probably different goals. How do you view them, and do they need to adapt differently to kind of avoid the Irondequoit? Do you guys worry about that? You know, do you look at Medley Center and think, that will never be us? We will never let that happen.
Medley Center, in terms of how it got to be where it is today, is certainly something that we've tried to learn from. We were the original developer of that property. We were fortunately able to sell the property before its ultimate demise. But it is a very good example of what you don't want to do.
You do not want a Twitter account for a lonely marketplace mall.
No.
We're never going to see that. Okay.
No.
So how do you view each of those properties and think that we've got to get ahead of the thing?
So before I go property to property, just to dovetail on your prior comment, Grease Ridge Center alone employs over 2,300 people. It generates almost $16 million of sales tax and pays over $5 million in property taxes. In the case of Eastview, over 3,800 people are employed there. It generates over $30 million of sales tax and pays property tax between $4 and $5 million. So the economic relevance from a lot of different levels of that of those entities, I think, is very important. About 15, 20 years ago, we made the decision to because each market, as you've pointed out, is very different. And it wasn't smart. You have to merchandise. You have to give the consumer what it is they want when they come to the mall. And in the case of I'll take it one at a time. I mean, Grease is a terrific community. It's a very dense community. I would say in terms of taking ownership of a property. The Greece resident really, we get 7 days a week. The traffic there is terrific. The food court has become a center for people to meet, both young and old. If you go there at 8 o'clock in the morning, there's a very vibrant group of people, mostly retirees, who will walk the mall, which, by the way, I think end-to-end is over a mile and a half, and then have a cup of coffee and sit there and, you know, chat with their friends for hours. And it's really incredible to see. In the case of Henrietta, which I think it's no secret, has had its problems and I think is a victim of the consolidation I mentioned earlier. We are actually, that's the one of the four properties that we envision the most dramatic evolution in terms of a non-retail outcome. While I can't necessarily go into more detail about that, plans are in the works that could dramatically change that project into a facility offering a wide range of uses, whether that's retail, office, or medical. I would just say in probably the next 6 to 8 months, there should be greater clarity on that. Pittsford Plaza, which interestingly enough was built back in 1961, is its success in part is its location, being on Monroe Avenue next to a very successful Wegmans store that I think most people have been to at some point. That project has gone through significant evolution, the coming and going of Chase Pitkin. We had a handful of different supermarkets, B-Foreman, theaters. I mean, there's been a lot of change there, but, you know, the project is in a very desirable location and continues to do well. And then in East, the case of Eastview, a super regional draw built in 1969, and then, excuse me, 71 and then expanded in 73 and 95 and 2003. We have deployed significant capital, especially over probably the past 20 or 25 years, creating the lifestyle entrance, bringing in Von Maur. Now we have Sears to deal with. We continue to see great opportunity and growth there, but back to Emily's comment earlier, we need the retailers to join us in this journey to create a better shopping experience. We recently opened up a new Apple store there, which if you compare that to what was there before, you know, you talk about an experience, it's an exponential improvement. And our hope is as we improve, the retailers will improve with us.
So are you saying that if Marketplace, for example, let's take the Henrietta property, if you'd made no essential foundational changes to that mall, it would stand the most chance of being endangered in a short amount of time?
Yes. Yes, I think as store count contracts, mm-hmm. flashback 20 years ago when Irondequoit Mall was a vibrant fourth regional mall, a lot of retailers, national, had up to three, maybe four locations in the market. Some of them now only have one, two at the most, so there has to be fallout. And unfortunately, Marketplace being geographically in the middle between the other two malls is really bared the brunt of those closures. And we don't anticipate those stores coming back. I mean, I think the key is finding new stores and managing what you have right now, or retaining, excuse me.
Talking to Dennis Wilmot, Senior Vice President for Leasing and Development at Wilmorite. Emily Hesney Lynch is here, who is Director of Content for iHeartRock and freelance social media strategist. And Lindsay Hicks, who used to be a marketing director for a mall in Michigan, now Assistant Director of Marketing here at RIT. Let me turn to Emily and Lindsay for their thoughts on what they're hearing. And as I do that, let me just get a little bit of a different perspective. Not different perspective, but just different ideas on where malls may be going. RetailDive.com had an article titled Not Dead, Just Changing, What the Future Holds for the American Mall. And they posited three ideas there. Number one, malls as lifestyle centers, the question of what happens next, including perhaps a wider range of options for visitors than just shopping and eating. So full lifestyle centers. Number two, malls as living spaces, taking the idea of lifestyle centers one step further, adding residential living space. And for me, I'm from the Cleveland area. I grew up in a town called Westlake, which has Crocker Park now. And that's essentially what number two on this list is. I know people who live there. They live in, you know, pretty deep, pretty good housing options, pretty expensive at times, but it's kind of a living space as well. And number three, malls is distribution or fulfillment facilities. So you remove the entertainment aspect of the mall completely, turn it into practical operations aimed at helping service a population that increasingly buys its goods online. Those are three of the ideas. I'm wondering what you guys think. Lindsay, I'll start with you.
Yeah, so everything you said, Dennis, I completely agree with. Throughout the 2 years, we battled a lot of the same negative stigma of malls. And it really is just that they're changing. You know, there was a boom at one point. There were a ton of malls built, and now we have another option. We have online sales. And the number of malls is decreasing because a lot of people are going online. However, the quality of those malls that are still here are increasing greatly. And it is really reliant up to the stores. The developer can really only do so much. It's the responsibility, not the responsibility of the stores, but a great responsibility leans on the stores to provide that better customer experience. So, yeah, I agree with what you said.
Did you agree with that, Dennis, that a lot of it's on the stores?
Yeah, I think they're, I mean, it's on us too. I mean, this is where it's more or less a partnership. And I think what the general public doesn't necessarily understand is in a lot of cases when we are bringing in new stores, there is, in essence, a partnership between us and the stores. Namely, we invest or partner with the store in terms of their build out and their costs as an inducement to have them come here. So, yes, I would agree with that.
All right. And Penny, I'm going to turn to Emily Hesney Lynch. Penny on Twitter writes and says, to me, this is like asking, how can Sears rework their catalog to adapt to shoppers' habits and preferences? Shopping has been distilled to getting the cheapest, the fastest, and malls can't compete with that. They weren't built to do that. Penny is raising a point about the purpose of malls to begin with, that it was to be an experience. People would sometimes browse 18, 20 stores. Not me, ever. I mean, that would drive me crazy. But a lot of people love stuff like that. And what Penny is offering is the idea that shopping itself as an experience is changing for the vast majority of the population. So I don't know if that's generational or not, but I wonder if you how you feel about that.
For me, not necessarily cheapest and fastest is not the only important factor. I do appreciate convenience hugely, of course, but local is something that I really love to support, so I'll go out to a local business anytime I can. There aren't always local businesses that I know of and love that carry exactly the clothes I want, which is when I find myself at a mall. But experience is important, too. So if a store offers a really high-quality experience that's consistent, I'll always go back to that store. And Dennis mentioned Von Maur, and that's my favorite place to go in ECU. There's always someone playing the piano. It's really classy. I can always find something great on the clearance rack, and it's just like my one go-to spot. I'll avoid everything else because I know the experience there is so good.
Okay, but do you find yourself, did you grow up, I mean, we all sort of grew up with, you know, malls were part of the American fabric. Do you find yourself and your friends kind of not wanting to go and walk around for a while kind of aimlessly just for the fun of it? Is that changing?
Yeah, I don't really see that as a fun social experience, no.
Okay. Dennis, is that overgeneralizing or is that part changing?
No, actually, that's that one component to try to address Emily's hesitation has actually been one segment that's probably changed the most over the past 5 or 10 years, and that's the non-retail experience. Step back 30, 40 years ago when the whole model of the mall was begun, having a restaurant or a movie theater or a hotel or residential was heresy. I mean, you know, the thought with a movie theater was they come, they take a parking spot up for 2 hours, and they leave. Now a movie theater is a cornerstone of any retail project. And that experience, and then it ties into the restaurants as well. What we did at Eastview and Grease Ridge, where we introduced a streetscape of restaurants, was a much had a much more larger impact in terms of both traffic generation, but also interest to give a customer another option other than just coming to have a purpose to go shop. How about you just come to go and actually enjoy a meal? And oh, by the way, you know, maybe afterwards you think of something that you might want to pick up before you go home. The mall is evolving into many more moving pieces and different non-retail segments to become more of a meeting place. And it doesn't happen overnight, but it I think we know where we need to be, and we've taken significant steps towards that. If I may interject, and I may be jumping ahead on you, Evan, as it relates to Sears, and I think we were riding up in the elevator with Randy, and we happened to touch on Sears. I said, well, when was the last time anyone went to Sears to shop? And I know Emily and Lindsay probably have never been to Sears, and Randy said, it's been a long time. And that's, I think Sears is the epitome of everything that's wrong with retail, and in terms of not investing in the experience, not having the product, you know, looking dated and not providing the customer the experience. And it's no surprise to us, or should be to anybody else, why, as a company, they're not going to be around in probably a year or two. Hmm. But for us, that's a huge opportunity, because when you drive into Eastview, it's the first thing you see. It's the oldest, most unsightly portion of the mall, but it's the best real estate of the mall. And the upside for that, for us, introducing new, whether non-retail, restaurant, experiential concepts, these, for us, has so much more upside than just having a department store that nobody wants to come visit.
So Sears is an opportunity for you, but has it been a headache for you?
It's been a headache in the sense that I think it perpetuates this feeling of the mall dying. I'm making a generalization about malls are dying. I mean, it's been on the news. Sears is going under. It's just another example of the mall having problems. But, you know, through the 40 to 50-year life cycle of shopping centers, there's a laundry list of retailers that have come and gone because of, I think, the tangibles that we talked about here. Nothing to do with the mall itself. Not that I'm saying there aren't issues ahead of us.
Sure.
But I see Sears as a huge opportunity for us to bring in these experiences that may get more of Emily and Lindsay's generation to come back to the mall and not feel like shopping is a chore, but shopping something that you can conveniently do after you do something that you're enjoying, whether that's a movie, a dinner, or something else, bowling, or, you know, something like that.
Okay, so what would bring you guys back to malls more often? Lindsay?
Personally, the way that I shop, I tend to stick with one store. I don't want to jump between different brands, unless there's one I'm very, very brand loyal to. So I tend to visit more of like a TJ Maxx, Marshalls. I like more of the fast fashion, but I want to, if I'm going to go there, I'm going to commit 2 hours and I'm going to look through the entire thing. Versus going to a mall and hopping from store to store, you have the added time for the transactions, exploring different options. You get in a different mindset. Okay, do I want to shop in an Express today? Do I want to venture into a Forever 21? I forgot what I was talking about.
But as you say, if you're just usually a one-store shopper, are you just the kind of person where you can't see yourself going to malls very often unless they totally reinvent to something very different?
If they bring in more of the type of shopping that I like, I would go for more experiences. I know there's some malls that are bringing in bowling and arcades, and they're not the kind you think of that you visit as a child. It's more of an adult. You know, you can go to the bar and then go play arcade games. That I would go for more of an experience if it were a cold winter day and I had nothing else to do.
Okay, other things to do. My son is tall enough now to do the RPM Raceway.
He's done it.
He's done it, by the way.
Yeah. Those cars are fast.
They're very fast. He's a big fan of that. Emily, what's it going to take to get you to be more excited to go to a mall in the future?
I really like shopping local, so it would be cool to see more local stores integrated into malls, and I don't know how feasible that model is if you're looking for a big national retailer because they're the ones that are going to bring in the big bucks. But for someone like me, I like to know my money is going to support a small business that's local. So when I go to Eastview, I'm always going to stop into Village Bakery and grab a coffee rather than stopping at Starbucks because I know that that's a local chain.
Okay. Dennis, thoughts on that?
I think she's right. And we've actually, our resource of both national and regional retailers and restaurants has kind of dried up. You know, a few years ago, we started to pursue the local options like the Village Bakery. We had a concept called Skinny Atlas 300 last year that we brought in as an incubator, an aggressive rent deal for a one-year trial. And if it works, let's talk about something long-term. It's not all dollars and cents. It is if we can bring in a local that's going to bring you into the mall, then our hope is you may walk by a storefront whether it's anthropology or somewhere, and something's in the window, catches your eye, and you walk in and you buy it. That's where we get our return on that investment. But we've come to the realization that it isn't all dollars and cents. There has to be that intangible to differentiate the experience and get customers to come in. Once they're inside the mall, it's really the retailer's job to, you know, capture that sale.
Let me get to your phone calls, and listeners, if you want to join the program, we're talking about the future of malls and whether the prognostication that we hear so often in the business community, that malls are dying. Business Insider in 2014, America's shopping malls are dying a slow, ugly death. 2017, CNN Money, malls are doomed. Boy, I mean, Dennis Wilmot surprised it. No, he's not surprised. He hears the prognostications, and what they're trying to do is stay ahead of the trends and respond to what the marketplace wants. So why don't you tell us, do you still shop at malls? What would bring you back to the malls? What would you want to see change? 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Keith, first up. Go ahead, Keith.
Hey, I'm going to be one of the people that will be sad and seriously used, because I always use them for tires, oil changes, and brakes, and while they were working on the car, I chop them off. But that aside, I think when Sears does vacate, I think that would be the ideal location at ECU for Tesla, because I think ECU has the capability of drawing the people to a Tesla store. But the other thing that I've noticed is what makes a mall is if it has an Apple store. That seems to be the most defining retailer. ECU is the only one around, and they just enlarged it. I think the other option is always the other problem with malls is getting them staffed. You always see signs, especially this time of the year. But has any maller ever thought of offering daycare within the mall's confines to the employees? To me, that seems like a no-brainer just to get the people. And lastly, has anybody there been to Cherry Creek Mall in Denver?
Yeah,
I was there, and I was blown aback, because it's a little bit interesting, because you have to pay to park, but if you buy something, they stamp your card. But you walk in there, and at first glance, it looks, because it's two stories, and it reminded me of a Rondequoit Mall, until I saw the Tiffany store, then I saw the Louis Vuitton, and I'm going, whoa, you talk about a high-end mall, this is it. That's it.
So thank you, Keith. You've been to that one?
Yeah, it's gorgeous. Yeah, it's a very nice mall.
Okay. Tesla. How about Tesla to replace
Sears? So we have been in discussions with Tesla. Now, Tesla is waiting on some state approvals for dealer. I don't even know if they call them dealerships, but there are some legal hurdles that they still need to work through in order to open stores in upstate New York. They are looking in Rochester for, in essence, a service center. And I think Keith's assumptions on where in the market they're looking are fair, and I'll just leave it at that.
Is it not impossible that Tesla would locate at Eastview Mall?
It's not out of the realm of possibility, yes.
If that were to happen, we would know by when?
I don't think for another year, based on the where the legislation is, because they can't do anything till the state approves.
Dennis, the whole community listens to this show. You could break some real news today, and you're kind of holding back a little.
But I don't want. I can't say something that isn't necessarily true. So
okay, that's fair enough. I do want to ask before we get our only break in, and then we're gonna dive into some of the many emails people have sent. I want to ask Emily and Lindsay what they think about this idea of what millennials killed. I had some comments where people were saying I'm offended at that. This notion of millennials killed phone landlines. Millennials killed the shopping mall. Millennials killed, you know, what? Voicemail. Whatever it is. Voicemail's terrible. It should have been killed. But every generation is changing. And so I don't know why it's become a meme, but some millennials have written to me today to say it's offensive. Even if we do kill the shopping mall, we're just, you know, habits change generation to generation. Are you offended by that, Lindsay?
No, every generation has killed something, I'm not.
I think it's become such a tongue-in-cheek phrase. No one's really super serious when they say it, and I think it's just, I get a laugh out of it. I'm happy to kill whatever industry needs to go.
You want to participate in the murder of bad
change
industry.
Change is
good. Inefficient industry. Change is good. 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. Do you go to the mall? Do you want malls to survive and thrive? Dennis Wilmot, you employ in the Rochester area at your four properties. How many people total?
Oh, I don't have the entire total. I just listed Greece and in Eastview.
3,800 and 20-something?
2,300,
yeah. So 6,100 at two different miles.
6,100 just at
two, yeah. So we're talking, you know, probably well over 10,000 when you look at all of their properties combined. It's a lot of people. And the question is, our habits of shopping, the impact of the way we shop and the way we spend our dollars, and what you want to see in terms of experience. So after we get our only break of the hour, we'll come back to your comments. And I do want to ask all of our guests if the question of urbanism can sort of translate to malls. Now, the New York Times wrote that in 1992, they could count 48 malls within a 90-minute drive of Times Square, and malls had become the main streets of America, as William Kowinski wrote in 1985 in his book, The Malling of America. Is that a good thing? If main streets are suffering, but malls are where people are going to have a cup of coffee, to walk, to do all those things we could do on main streets, is that a good thing? And can we learn lessons from urbanism and apply any of that? We'll talk about that as well and get more of your phone calls and comments next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, Tuesday on The Next Connections. An upcoming conference highlights unique learning and education needs for young men of color. The Boys and Men of Color Education Summit will discuss representation in schools and the community, culturally responsible teaching practices, mentorship, and more. We'll preview that conference with our guests. Then Stephanie Miner, former Syracuse mayor, running for governor, joins us in studio. Talk with you Tuesday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. By the way, you guys agree with Keith's point on a mall's got to have an Apple store to be, I mean, you've got one Apple store.
Yes, we got a new Apple store. It's three times the size of the old Apple store.
It is
fabulous, yes.
Okay, but your other malls don't have Apple store.
Apple is, and I think Keith was very perceptive, Apple is the most coveted name for our industry and the traffic that it drives. I mean, you go to Apple, unfortunately, I think more times than not for necessity. I was there this weekend because my son cracked his screen on his phone. Mm-hmm. But they create an experience that is unlike anything. And you walk in, you check in. The customer service, bar none, is, I think, paramount in our industry. And, yeah, Apple, without Apple, you're, you know, it's tough.
Okay. Well,
my husband and I walked by that new store last weekend, and it was the only storefront we walked by and went, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was beautiful.
It is, yeah.
I will say, I want to put in a vote for every mall should have a kids' play area. Not just 67% of your malls, but all of them.
Yes.
Okay. That's
duly noted.
Since you're here,
yes.
I thought I would put that in there. And speaking of Apple and more, here's Rob and Henriette on the phone. Go ahead, Rob.
Hello. Am I on?
You're on right now. We can hear you.
Okay, great. All right, thank you. Yes, my name is Rob, and I'm an adjunct professor of business at RIT. And I would just say that if we think historically of the mall as being kind of like the modern-day agora from Greece, of the gathering place of people, that I'm not so sure that it was Jeff Bezos and Amazon that kind of killed all of that. I believe it was Steve Jobs and Tim Cook and Apple that have created this social media network or social media air where students, where people, millennials, don't socialize personally anymore. So I'm sort of thinking that because kids don't get together in person, that I believe that is part of the demise of the mall.
I don't. This is one. See, Rob, everything that I have researched and tried to understand about sort of changing culture, one of the reasons that coffee shops are thriving is because millennials and Gen Z, they love to get together in person and actually sit down face to face. They spend so much time screen time that they actually like that. At least, I mean, I'll be corrected in a moment, I'm sure, in studio. But that's my observation. You don't think so, Rob?
Right. Well, I do, but I think it's a different kind of retailing. That's a different kind of socializing slash retailing.
Okay.
And I see it in my students all the time where I'll walk into a classroom full of students, and there you could hear a pin drop because everybody is on their screen. And I just think that they socialize electronically, and the retailing or actual gathering of people in the space is not that important these days.
Okay, fair enough. Thanks, Rob. I appreciate the phone call. Meeting in person.
I kind of do agree with that a bit. Doing social media and everything that I do right now, Emily does it as well. Where am I going with this? Hold on, you take over. I lost my thought.
At times I do forget that I haven't seen someone in several months because I've been talking to them on Twitter mm-hmm. every day, and it's easy enough to think that we're still connected. But I find myself at Ugly Duck Coffee like two or three times a week meeting people face-to-face, or I'll go to a yoga class at a winery or something. So there are ways that I'm spending my money that are social.
I think it's also the expansion of options that we have. I remember going to the mall or the movie theater when I was younger. You got a ride there, and that was the only place that you could go. Our generation right now, we can go everywhere, anywhere. We have Uber. We have public transportation. We have obviously have always had cars. But I think we have more options to do those things, and we know it's trending right now. If you know on social media that your friends are going to the coffee shop, you're going to be more apt to go there, where if no one you know is going to a mall, you might not go.
Okay. Dennis, how do you feel about this idea that younger shoppers, you know, how Rob sees their change in habits?
Yeah, I have four kids, two in college, two in high school, and I'm always a little amused, especially with the younger ones, when they're all sitting in a room together, seven, eight of their friends, and they're all on their phones and nobody's talking, and they're probably texting each other. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that has a huge impact on, you know, what's happening in our industry. My kids that are in high school still very much like to go to the mall. They do buy online as well. But I think we're still social creatures, whether through electronic medium or through personal interaction. And I just don't think you can completely remove one for the other.
I think the social sharing aspect can work for good or for bad for a mall, too, because I went to the mall and tweeted about it afterwards, and mm-hmm. I went to Ugly Duck Coffee and posted about it on Instagram. So everyone's doing the social aspect in real life, but also online. Mm-hmm. So that sharing of feedback is instantaneous.
Yeah, yeah.
Jane writes to us and says, I go to Pittsford Plaza, but the parking there is the worst. Says, if the parking were better, I know I would frequent it more, as would others I know. All right, Dennis.
Well, candidly, we like full lots rather than empty lots. So I apologize for her perception. I mean, there's not much we can do. We're very proud of Pittsford, its age, and how good we think it looks, especially with the flowers and the plants in the summer. And unfortunately, that's just something that's a difficult problem to remedy. We're making it as good as we can.
I want to go back to what we had mentioned just before the break, which is that when William Kowinski wrote The Malling of America, he wrote that malls had become the new main streets of America. And he said, you know, legal cases throughout that decade tested the argument that malls should not be seen as private spaces because so much of public life was happening there. Main streets might be suffering. Malls were thriving. Is that a good thing for you and for Wilmer, right, I assume, Dennis? Is that good for communities if malls are more vibrant than main streets?
Yeah, I think it's headed in that direction more so than even in the past. And I think what's accelerated that change is everything that we've talked about. I can't speak necessarily to Main Street, but if you think about the amenities and the conveniences that a mall can offer in terms of shared services outside of retail, as it evolves with apartments, hospitality or hotels, office, restaurants, medical. I mean, all as the demand for space from retailers diminishes, there's a rising demand from all these other non-retail uses that I think will perpetuate an even more significant feel that it is almost a town square and or a main street, not just an exclusive retail center.
Okay. Emily, how do you feel about that main street and that the idea that you can take the concepts of urbanism, the walkability, the local, the spending a lot of time without driving from place to place, and does that apply to malls potentially? Or are malls always going to feel like a mall to you?
It's an interesting idea. One of my favorite malls that I've been to is in Austin, Texas. It's called The Domain, and it's this very large, sprawling complex, but a lot of it is outdoors because the weather is always so wonderful in Austin, and you can kind of meander up and down the street. You can have your coffee. There are lots of coffee shops and restaurants, some high-end stores you can go in. There's a movie theater, a bowling alley, and apartments. So I think that centralization where it's its own community is really nice, and I think that could work, but it would be interesting to see in our snowy climate what we could do to have some outdoor elements maybe to make it more fun.
Hmm. Lindsay, what do you think?
Yeah, demalling is becoming huge, and I mean, in snowy climates are a ways. There's heated sidewalks, but essentially a lot of malls are demalling to differentiate themselves from those enclosed malls. There's definitely bringing the mall and turning it back into more of a downtown feel.
Yeah. Is demalling an actual verb, by the way?
That's a good question, but I think everyone knows what it means.
Okay. So. All right. Fair enough. Seth writes to us on Twitter and says, Wilmerite scoffed for months at anyone asking whether plans for Marketplace Mall converting to an outlet destination had been abandoned, and now it's in danger of closing. So let me back up here and say, Dennis has not broken official I think we've broken a little news, but we haven't broken anything official here. I mean, my interpretation, to be fair to Dennis Wilmot and Wilmerite, is that what he's saying is they're thinking about Marketplace Mall in particular, in Henrietta, as the most in danger of closing if no change was made. I mean, malls in general have had to adapt, and that has to have some level of change. And they are, within the next year, 6, 8, maybe 12 months, going to roll out what the future of Marketplace is going to look like, and it may not be the outlet destination. Is that
fair? Yes, that's fair, and thanks for the clarification. I mean, the mall is currently 75% leased, so we are in no situation like what Medley Center was when it went off the cliff. What I meant to say is while we continue to pursue the outlet concept, there are other opportunities that we feel could not only help the retail, but also create a back to the Main Street or Town Square. I think Marketplace, from a real estate location, is an exceptional location. It's central. It's got great highway access, great road network. It's closest to the two largest universities in our area, the highest amount of daytime population within 2 miles. I mean, all the fundamentals are terrific there. We're looking at another course, but something that could be wildly successful for everybody.
No, it's the only place in Henrietta where it's legal to walk is in Marketplace Mall. The rest of Henrietta, you can't even walk. So that'll be interesting to see. And then the other piece, again, potential news down the line is Tesla, because a lot of people are buzzing now when you mention Tesla. Mm-hmm. So again, to clarify, he didn't say Tesla's coming, but Sears at Eastview is going to be closing when?
November.
All right, Sears is closing next month.
Yes.
And you've got a lot of space there. And Tesla has been eyeing different markets like Rochester. Now, right now, the law says they can't have a dealership. Is that correct?
My understanding is the law of the state of New York wouldn't, and I'm sure I encourage someone to call and clarify, but the state of New York does not allow Tesla to sell cars via a dealership. I believe that there is something pending in the legislature to change that, but it has not yet passed. But Tesla is permitted to construct service centers where a Tesla owner can bring their car to be serviced.
Okay. And so if Tesla were to come here,
yes,
it would be a service center
to
first.
To start, yes.
And then maybe a dealership.
Correct.
With an evolution of the law.
Yes.
And we could find out within maybe a year or so on that.
Call your local legislator and ask him.
Are you hopeful? Do you want Tesla?
I am optimistic. Yes. We love Tesla, and we hope they come to Eastview.
All right. So now what I want to do is I want to grab a couple more phone calls, and we'll get some closing thoughts from our guests. We'll ask Dennis to sort of forecast what he thinks those properties are going to look like in 10 years. Mm-hmm. And we're going to ask our guests what they think that companies like Wilmerite should be listening to when it comes to the public. And, you know, that's part of the deal. You do not survive if you don't listen to your customers. John in Henrietta first. Go ahead, John.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I was just in Spain a few weeks ago, and I was really struck by the intimacy of many small plazas closely situated that make it very easy for people to communicate with each other without using a car. And the malls seem to be pulling society apart, and technology seems to be of no help to that. So That's my comment.
Okay. Thanks, John. Anything you want to add there, Dennis Wilmot?
Well, you got to get to the mall somehow, so I'm not sure. I'm not sure other than a car how we can accommodate.
It's a different society. Yeah. I mean, it is. I take the point, John. I appreciate that. Brian in Spencerport wants to talk about sidewalks and supermarkets in the mall. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, I think a lot of times the malls are just too big to actually walk them, although I do see some lots of people walking just for exercise. But if I want to go shopping and there's one store on one end of the mall and another on the other end, I'm not going to go to both of them. Mm-hmm. Plus, I think that it would be helpful if there was a Wegmans in some of these malls.
Okay. Brian, thank you.
So I can't speak for Wegmans. That's something you'd have to call them on. But as it relates to the size, yeah, I think there's some cases you could say some mall facilities are oversized. You know, the adage is the minute a customer gets into their car a second time, they're not coming back. So, but on the flip side, one of the advantages we feel a mall offers is if you think of something that you didn't before, or that, you know, we can offer more options so that you may not go to another store one day, but you may go to that store another day and not the store you visited prior. So our goal is to get you to the mall, and then at that point, we just hope that you spend more time there.
All right, so maybe some quick answers from Dennis on a number of questions. I'll get as many as I can, and then we'll get some final thoughts from our guests. Benjamin says, the environmental impact of malls is what makes me stay away. Big swaths of pavement coupled with all the energy to heat and cool them. Is that a fair criticism?
No, I don't think it's fair. And the alternative is, do you want a greenfield site that isn't already developed to be constructed for an alternative to the mall? I mean, one of the goals for Marketplace is to repurpose an existing facility. The town of Henrietta has a very in-depth, comprehensive plan whose goal is to repurpose existing facilities rather than develop greenfield. So our sites are developed, the utilities, stormwater, everything's there. Why not use what's there rather than pave over a farm field?
Emma writes on Twitter and says, I've changed my shopping habits as more stores in the mall have added social responsibility to their models. For instance, Athleta?
I think it could be either.
Athleta.
Is it? Okay.
Oh, thank you, Lindsay. Finally settled it. Athleta, for example, recently became a B Corp. Madewell recycles their jeans, etc. So there you go. So there's a vote for more social responsibility. Rachel says, I've taken cooking classes at Williams-Sonoma and yoga classes at Athleta, and I've enjoyed both. Why not move these opportunities out into the mall rather than in-store so more people can benefit and enjoy? That's not your call, is it, in that one?
That is. We encourage the retailers to do, and actually there was a Pilates class at the Center Court of Eastview yesterday at 12 o'clock. So we encourage our tenants to take advantage of the common areas and the advantages they may offer, not only from marketing but for climate as well.
Okay. Nancy says, on malls, explain why Greece won't allow teens without a parent.
Well, that's, you know, we had issues a few years ago where, you know, and it's always, there's a few rotten eggs that spoil everything for everybody else, and we had some issues, and that policy was passed, and we've received more favorable than not response from the community for that policy. Sometimes you just have to implement things to make it a nicer and safer environment for the majority of the population.
Okay, so right now that policy stays?
Yes.
Okay, so I think, Emily, your tweet was, you know, you had a frustrating experience, but that's part of what social media is, and I think it's generated a really valuable discussion. What have you gained from this conversation with Dennis, and what do you think about the future of this kind of a shopping experience?
I think it's really interesting to have conversations like this and to know that the people running malls are open to feedback from the community, which is great. And it's nice to hear that they're very receptive to having local businesses in the mall. I know the Leaf Tea Bar opened there recently, mm-hmm. which was great, and we talked about Village Bakery. So I think there is potential for malls to be kind of revived and seen in new lights, the demalling concept mm-hmm. we talked about and all of that. I worked at Eastview Target for 6 years, so I'm not by any means saying kill all retail, kill all malls. So
okay.
Good to talk to everyone.
Okay, Lindsay.
I still stand by that stores definitely need to increase their experiences. They need to work alongside of their e-commerce divisions and create a better experience for the customer overall. So even if you are ordering online, when you go into the store, you feel it feels cohesive and it's all the same brand and you get the same experience.
And Dennis, it would be a total trap if I asked you to predict what your properties are going to look like in 10 years, because that would be me asking you to give away possible changes coming. But just speaking broadly, 10 years from now, you think the four that you have, Pittsford Plaza and the three local malls, are still here in many ways, and they look largely different, largely the same, with different function?
They're definitely all here. I think they definitely do look different in some respects. The most obvious is the two Sears stores, both at Greece mm-hmm. and Eastview. I think the tenant mix will evolve to less retail, more non-retail, again, like whether that's office, hospitality, or residential. But they continue to be vibrant enterprises, and we hope that the direction we're going is the right one.
I don't think I've ever had a mall show or a consumer local show where no one asked if IKEA is coming. So, on behalf of all the IKEA fans, are we ever going to see IKEA in Rochester?
We were this close to IKEA.
Were you really?
They did it was in the news. It was a little premature.
I don't remember. But, was it just a few years ago?
No, last fall.
Oh,
or, no,
boy.
I mean, in the spring, I think. We had the group here. We were on the short list. And then about a month later, the parent corp in Sweden pulled the plug on all brick-and-mortar expansion in the U.S. So
no brick-and-mortar expansion in this entire country?
For now, yes. So, I think that'll change.
So don't take it personally, Rochester.
We didn't. No.
Okay. And so in the future, you'd still love to see it
I
happen.
Think we got a great shot.
Okay.
I do.
Dennis, thanks. And we cover a lot of ground, and I always appreciate the time with you. I know you're a busy guy. Dennis Wilmot, Senior Vice President for Leasing and Development at Wilmorite. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Always good to see Emily Hesney Lynch, Director of Content for iHeartRock and freelance social media strategist. And thanks for this. We had a good conversation because of your tweet.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Emily. And Lindsay Hicks, nice having you. Former Marketing Director at a Michigan mall, now Assistant Director of Marketing at RIT. Nice having you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Rob Braden, engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Wherever you are, wherever you're going, have a nice afternoon. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.